Hi, I'm Anne McElhenney.
And I'm Philip McAleer.
And welcome to the Anne and Philip Scoop Daily Virus of 2021. Yay. Who'd have believed it, Philip? What do we do normally on the Daily Virus, Philip?
We discuss the latest news, views, advice and madness of the pandemic.
So it's day 294, and somebody can write in and correct me on that, but I believe I got those numbers right, of the 14-day flatten the curve lockdown. That's week 41. That's 10 and a quarter months of the 2-week flatten the curve lockdown. It is January the 4th.
10 and a quarter months.
2 days to little Christmas. 2 days before you have to take the Christmas tree down. And this is our first virus of the new year.
10 and a quarter months, that sounds like, where's that heading towards, Anne?
Yeah, that's like, you know, in a few birthdays, you'll have a big birthday, that kind of thing. So yeah, so it basically 10 and a quarter months tells you that we're coming very close to 12 months of the 2-week flatten the curve lockdown.
A 1 year?
Yeah, that'll be a grim...
A calendar year?
As the newspapers around here like to say, a grim milestone.
Of us getting up at 5 a.m.
That's the grim part of it for me. So how was Christmas for you and how was your new year? Very nice year. Very nice. Lovely to take a break. Really enjoyed not getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. But we actually had to get tested.
Yeah, we did. We got one of those, as you say, we got one of those emails from people saying, we met these people and then got an email a week later saying, you better get tested because my wife has tested positive.
But in that case, that gentleman, his wife had tested positive. He didn't get tested positive. Anyway, Phil and I... And all
he got tested, but wasn't positive. We went off, we did the rapid test.
The rapid test, which is the one which is the Q-tip to the brain stem. Very unpleasant altogether, but rapid test, and we got both negative results.
Both negative, yeah.
So that was kind of an interesting experience.
So we're here in Los Angeles. And after 9 months, I think, of telling you there's a pandemic and the numbers not backing it up, it looks like the numbers are quite serious here in Los Angeles. But the problem is they've been lying and exaggerating to us for so long that I don't know what to believe anymore.
Yeah,
we've been spending a lot of resources trying to understand these figures. So, you know, they've been lying and exaggerating about the figures for so long here in Los Angeles. I mean, we were told that the lockdown was justified last March. It was justified in July. The figures never matched the reality. And it's hard to know if the figures are matching the reality now because we're being told that the hospitals are overwhelmed. But they won't say overwhelmed compared to what? How bad was it during a bad flu year? We never see that. You never, ever see that context. And I know that when journalists and the government don't give you context, there's a reason for that. It's because they don't want to give you context, because when they give you context, the line they're pushing doesn't look as impressive or persuasive.
Suddenly the panic porn isn't that panicky at all.
Yes. Yeah. So can someone send to us maybe the figures for Los Angeles? We're trying to find them during a virulent flu season. A really bad flu season, because we don't know how bad this is compared to a flu season.
And certainly the media aren't being helpful.
I'm talking about hospital overload. This is the thing we're told now, that the hospitals are becoming overloaded and can't cope. And by the way, you had 9, how long did we have? 10 and a quarter months to build up
capacity,
intensive care units.
And they didn't do it.
You spend all your energy trying to close restaurants, prosecute people, fine people, close beaches. What else did they do? What else did they do? Surely the thing to do was, and you know, everyone knows, I remember my brother, who's a doctor, telling me that viruses are a winter thing, that they increase in the winter because people spend more time indoors. People knew that winter would see a surge in the virus. So why didn't you increase the number of intensive care unit beds? Why didn't you increase the number of staff? Why didn't you give bonuses for retired staff to come back to work? Why didn't you try and retain staff? Why didn't you do rapid training for student nurses to train them in ICU facilities? None of this was done. And here we are. Apparently, and the IC units are overwhelmed. But I'd love to know, how overwhelmed they are during a really bad flu season. And I'm not saying that the Wuhan flu is like a flu. It's more dangerous than that, obviously. But I'd like to know just how bad the ICU units are during a bad flu season. So what else? Oh, yes.
And also during Christmas, I mean, I know, here's a grim headline from NBC where a Chinese court has sentenced a citizen journalist who reported from Wuhan, the city with the COVID pandemic is believed to have started, to 4 years in jail. And I don't know if you saw that story over Christmas. Her lawyer has confirmed the woman, Zhang Zhan, 37, was one of several citizen journalists whose first-hand accounts of the first emergence of the virus nearly a year ago painted a more dire picture of the early outbreak than the government's official narrative.
So basically, they were doing journalism and exposing the truth about how the devastation was causing in China. And she's got 4 years now for spreading
false information, giving interviews to foreign media, disrupting social order and attacking the government.
So that's just
4 years in prison for that.
Just let's be clear here. So there's all this talk about how terrible America's doing and how terrible other places are doing. And Britain, basically anywhere with a conservative government is doing really badly, I think, is the narrative, even though Belgium has the worst figures in the world. But it's quite clear the worst figures in the world are from China.
It's very interesting, and I just put this up here just for context, and I think context is very important. So, you know, you hear an awful lot about the numbers of people who've died across the world, huge numbers, you know, over 300,000 in America and, mm-hmm. you know, not big numbers in the UK and all these places. So here's the official numbers of dead from China. Are you ready? Now, first of all, again, a little bit of context. The population of China is 1.5 billion, billion with a B, and reported deaths from COVID, 4,634. That's kind of all you really need to know. And they also are saying that the number of cases they ever had, they had 87,000 cases in China.
Cases,
yeah.
So, I mean, now you could argue that the death rate in China would be lower because there's not as much obesity in China due to diet and probably genetics. But the idea that there's only 87,000 cases, perhaps. And by the way, it just struck me there, looking, you know, true, places like Japan and China may have a lower death rate because of lack of obesity. How many deaths do you think the body positivity movement in the United States and in the Western world has caused? So we're being told now that you can't fat shame people. And I speak as someone who is
gorgeous and
curvy.
And curvy.
Yes.
Like curvy husband.
A curvy husband. I speak as someone with curves. More curves recently, actually, than normal.
We all have more curves now, Phelan.
Yes. So I speak with someone with curves. But, you know, this body positivity movement that's very popular now in the Western world, actually, and how stars are being praised.
It's funny. Last night, I actually was scrolling through Twitter and saw the front page cover shoots for, I think, Cosmopolitan for February, mm-hmm. which have these very, very overweight women and saying basically, this is healthy. That's what the line is. This is healthy.
Not this is beautiful.
This is beautiful. This is healthy.
It used to be this is beautiful. Now, well, you know,
as you say, that's really not a good message to be sending out to people.
It's not. No. I mean, obesity is one of the comorbidities that really are very, very dangerous.
And very clear during this pandemic. But moving on.
We have a lot to do today.
So the rules don't apply to Nancy Pelosi, Phelan. What happened here?
Well, we haven't even done the teasers yet, actually.
Yes.
So, and then also in New York, on New Year's Eve, Mayor de Blasio had an opportunity to show the world his true colors. Oh, get that.
And his true colors, that'll me. And guess what he did? And Governor Cuomo has shown his priorities during the pandemic.
We'll get
and
to
the
that.
Year begins, and the mainstream media are still hateful liars. We look at a story from the Washington Post, and we have a hypocrite of the day already, Chicago Teachers Union leader. And we also have another story from the unions, from the D.C. District, the District of Columbia Teachers, proving without any doubt that they really just don't care.
And we look at how Canadians are COVID hypocrites too. Who knew those nice Canadians? We knew. We've known Canadians for a long time.
We have. God help us.
God help us.
All right, but that's actually that's not fair as well on the nice Canadians we know, and we know lots of nice Canadians. Yes. But now,
Nancy Pelosi survived a very narrow vote yesterday. She's now Speaker of the House. Well done, Nancy.
Oh, she's for the fourth time, I think.
104 or whatever age she is, and America, of course, is enthralled to youth.
Well, America can't do without Nancy Pelosi's leadership.
Yeah.
Go on ahead.
So to ensure that she narrowly squeaked in. People, members of Congress who were tested positive for COVID were allowed in to vote.
So they was just that important. Basically life and death, then,
life
really.
Life and death.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. They were isolated in one corner of the thing, but they were allowed into the gallery.
Indoors.
To mix with other people in a room for a vote. That's how important Nancy Pelosi is.
Well, these are the people.
To the world.
These, by the way, are our leaders. But I don't know how many of you watched. By the way, I think it's like the worst thing ever to watch. The 1st of January is my birthday. Whoopee to me. Oh, what a nightmare. So we're very often already in bed before midnight because I just don't like the whole arrangement, the whole situation. But what really, living in America and having that CNN show, it's enough to put anyone going to bed early.
It's enough to put you to the bed.
It's to put you into the bed. So basically, it's Anderson Cooper, and this year he was joined by Andy Cohen, who's a friend of his, and they're doing shots and all this kind of thing. But the best worst moment of the night, there's no competition, is Mayor de Blasio, who had admonished the residents of New York City and said, don't you dare come out. Do not dare to come to Times Square for the dropping of the ball and all that. No way. Do not do that. However, himself and his wife came to New Year's Eve party. And not only did they come there, but they danced. And one tweeter, I thought I put it really, really nice, David Burge, I really like him, the Iowa Hawk blog, he said, nothing lifts one's spirits quite like seeing a politician dancing with joy in the pandemic-deserted streets of a dying megalopolis as Sinatra echoes eerily through the canyons of the 50 billion watt LED billboards for shitty TV shows.
Yeah.
I thought that was very good. But basically, yeah, Mayor de Blasio, he danced with his, you know, with his wife. And so actually Andy Cohen, who I think had been doing shots, and as I said, I did not watch this live, but I've heard about it afterwards. He was doing this shot, tequila shots with Anderson Cooper, and I get the impression that Anderson Cooper probably is very refined and drinks very superior wines, rather sip-like. But suddenly that night, he has to do this kind of boyish stuff, apparently, to prove himself or something. And there's all this kind of very juvenile drinking that goes on. But anyway, Cohen basically said, you know, he was super annoyed when he saw all this going on, and he said, do something with this city, he exclaimed with his arms outright as de Blasio was dancing. Honestly, get it together.
He went into a rant, basically.
He went into a rant, yeah.
Yeah, and welcome, you know, why haven't you said something before, Andy? And welcome to the team.
Yeah.
So
also in New York, we found out that Andrew Cuomo, you know, and this is from the Daily Mail, but I mean, this is incredible. The New York
This is not just Cuomo. Other Democrats, mayors and governors are doing this. They are, so the CDC says, you know, the most vulnerable are the elderly. And so give it to the elderly.
Prioritize the vaccine to the elderly.
Yes. And actually, no, the CDC doesn't say that. That would be your normal way of going along. But the CDC and the Democratic establishment have come to the conclusion, and it's true, that the elderly are majority white. That would be racially unequal and unfair. So they're giving it to blacks, Hispanics, people of color, all the rainbow, the gays, the whatever, all the rainbow, in order to be equal and to be fair, and letting people over 70 die because they're not being given the vaccine first.
So in New York, what they're doing, they're going to prioritize drug addicts ahead of the elderly. So basically, a spokesman for Cuomo said he has insisted that nursing home residents are still being prioritized and will be receiving the vaccine. However, the first in line are going, so before the elderly get it, drug users are going to get it. The Office of Addicted Services and Support said that drug users are being stigmatized. Those at high risk of COVID should be vaccinated in line with other high risk populations.
Yeah, well,
Just incredible.
So have a look at the figures. Have a look at the racial makeup of the figures, and you'll see that they're prioritizing social justice politics as opposed to...
And it took Ben Domenech, by the way, of the Federalist to call this out. He basically, you know, said that the woke left, you know, that their approach is dangerous to the American people, that the woke left are going to be prioritizing people not based on a medical, the medical necessity, the medical, you know, guidelines. They're actually going to be looking at other, they're going to be looking at other things.
Yeah. Of course.
Like the woke groups, which is, you know, it should actually be, what they should be doing
social
is...
Social justice,
doing,
it's a social
doing,
justice rollout.
Medicine should be the same as justice, you know, and that image. Justice is blind. So should the medical establishment be blind to the colour of you, the size of you, the whatever your any of your preferences. They should be like, who is most vulnerable? And the most vulnerable population, as we all know for sure right now, are the elderly, and they should be getting it first.
And they should be given it regardless of the colour of their skin. So you want to talk about the Washington Post?
The Washington Post story, yeah. So the Washington Post, so basically, you know, the Washington Post have this big story about Brazil. And by the way, two things about this that are very sad. So Brazil, oh God, the Washington Post, it's terrible. What's going on in Brazil, how bad things are in Brazil. And they give this story, and I'm going to tell the story because it's worth hearing. You know, these newspapers like the New York Times, they love to do this, you know, individualize it down to one person. So, Furtada, a 31-year-old woman without any serious health conditions, right? Hadn't been outdoors since March 18th. So she hasn't been outdoors. Not to buy groceries, not to replenish her toiletries.
God help her.
Not even to take a stroll. She now felt uncertain. Was it safe? I have no idea. These numbers are underreported, she said. People are getting sick. So she's terrified. So this is a random woman in Brazil who is terrified of going outside and hasn't been outside since March. Why, oh why, oh why, Philip, is she so terrified? And it's so interesting here, just to go on with the Washington Post story, unbelievable. The story of Brazil during the coronavirus pandemic, which has killed more people here, that's in Brazil, than in any other country but the United States, has been largely one of denial or resignation. So this is interesting, by the way. You read that, a regular person would read that and think, oh God, the worst places in the world. Number one, America. Number two, Brazil. I mean, you know, I'm not stupid. I'm reading that correctly,
yes,
right?
Yes.
However, that's completely untrue. Like that couldn't be more untrue. And I'll tell you how untrue it is. Because the only thing that matters, as we say here all the time, is per capita deaths. How many people per million are dying? And if you do that metric, the number is, did you put the rubbish out last night, Phelan?
I did not.
Just reminding Phelan now to put out the rubbish. You could do that and I'll finish this story because I can just hear the truck coming by here. Deaths per capita in Brazil. Brazil is number 23. The United States is number 14. Brazil is 23 in terms of the number of people who have died. And yet you got the Washington Post making this, you know, sound to you. And what's really awful about this story, it is an awful story. And she's not the only one. Imagine a 32-year-old woman who has not left her house since March the 18th. Now, there's a couple of things in that as well, by the way. She's obviously wealthy. She's obviously in a position where she can have everything. And by the way, someone's delivering all the goods to her. So someone's putting themselves at risk, if you know, as it were, in this extremely dangerous place that Brazil is. But one of the things that I thought was very interesting about this is why, oh why, here's a question for our audience as we wait for Phelan to come back from putting out the bins. Why, oh why, would it be that the Washington Post would want to paint the United States and Brazil as the worst places in the world, despite the evidence? And by the way, on the same metric, as I said, Brazil is number 23 in deaths per million. The United States is 14. What if those two, so basically they're not significant. Numerically, from a numerical point of view, they're not actually at all significant. But why would the Washington Post want them to sound so bad?
Answers.
And Phelan is back in. Phelan, what's the answer? Why? What do these two countries have in common that would make the Washington Post want them to sound bad?
They're both led by conservative leaders.
Oh, shocker.
And they're both led by anti-establishment leaders, not just conservative. Bolsonaro and Trump are against the Republican establishment and against the Democratic establishment, against the deep states in these countries, and they must be taken out at all costs.
Yeah. So Our next story basically very, very extraordinary that this early in the year we have a hypocrite of the year, and the hypocrite of the year, of the day, of the week
is Sarah Chambers.
Sarah, who is the, one of the leaders of the Chicago Teachers Union.
Yes.
And she argues that teachers should strike. They should totally go on strike if anyone tries to make them return to the classroom, because it isn't safe.
By the way, no data to back that up at all. In fact, there's data to show that it's actually...
Exactly the opposite. Yes. But they shouldn't do that. And there's a plot twist in this. What's the plot twist, Phelan?
Sarah Chambers, God bless her, had she was making this impassioned argument that being out and about in the world is not safe. She made an argument from Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
Where she traveled to celebrate the New Year's.
Of course
so,
she did.
So it's safe for her to travel halfway across the world. But it's not safe for people to go into a for children to go to a classroom, she's alleging.
I think technically it's not halfway across the world. However, it is the Caribbean. It's a bit of, we've been there. It's
yes.
Lovely, by the way.
It's lovely.
Very nice. Puerto Rico, lovely.
Puerto Rico.
She's a lovely place to go to.
Yes.
But yes, this is what she did. And, you know, the number of people, by the way, who've been caught over, and we're going to do more of that later on,
yes.
But the number of people who've been caught telling people, whatever you do, don't leave the house. Whatever you do, don't leave the house.
Yeah.
Then it's discovered that the people saying that are actually saying it from some remote and
yes.
gorgeous location.
And we're going to be talking about that later.
We are going to be talking about that more but later. But let's continue just talking about teachers' unions. And from one awful teachers' union story to another awful teachers' union stories. And this one is from Washington, D.C., where the teachers in Washington, D.C. basically are, you know, they've been in negotiations forever, like forever.
Yeah.
To try to get back to school and all of that, and there's all this,
yeah.
You know. But I'm just going to read this. It's just terrible.
Well,
this is from the Washington Post.
The unions agreed to go back and then backed out a few days later. They asked for demands that went far beyond what was in place elsewhere and beyond guidelines set by its own union at a national level.
And here's the result: teachers were applying maximum pressure to stay closed. And have opposed plans to reopen the classes.
Every plan.
Well beyond guidelines adopted by the American Federation of Teachers and their teacher union. And by the way, one thing to say about Ireland that we know about, Ireland, the schools never closed. The schools actually never closed. And what's really awful about this particular school district, the Washington DC school district, you know, because everyone talks about how much they care about minorities and about children that are being disproportionately discriminated against because of the shutdowns and whatever. So it's good to know and worth remembering that this area, this school district where these teachers are so unwilling to go back to school, 80% of the school system's 52,000 students are black or Hispanic, and 47% are considered at risk, which puts them in the highest possible need category. The union said teaching had to be optional for all teachers, even those who are young and healthy, or nobody would go back.
They're condemning
everyone.
People of color, you know, the people they say they care about.
POCs.
People of color and impoverished people of color to a year without school that is going to...
Damage them forever
and ensure that they're just stuck in... I mean, when you come from a dysfunctional household or a special needs or a high needs household, you know, at-home schooling doesn't work very often.
Yeah.
It doesn't work even if you've got a very nice, secure home. And, you know, we're going to look at a time bomb, an educational time bomb that's going to explode in 5 or 10 or 15 years' time.
No, people are going to be talking about this for millennia. They're going to be talking about this, you know, decades in the future, the results of this disastrous behaviour by teachers' unions. We're going to see the results. We're going to have to live with the results of what they've done.
Yeah.
It's despicable. And we know from other school districts in America where schools have been closed since March, we know from people we know in Fairfax County, for example, one of the richest school districts in the United States, that the parents there are receiving no information from the schools about reopening. Nothing about reopening.
No talk
at all about reopening. And this is in the same district where there is, I think at the moment, the highest level of school failure in the country. And I think they probably aren't even measuring school failure here in Washington, D.C., in that particular district. But which is an awful story. We're going to talk a lot more about schools as we go forward, because this is going. I think this could be the biggest victim situation will be among children. What's happening in Canada?
Well, Canada, you know, so
nearest neighbor.
You know, basically, it's bloody cold up there.
To be fair.
And, you know, of course, and I suppose it's like your one in Chicago, the teachers' union. Everyone wants to get out of these
places. Chicago's awful in the winter.
It's awful, you know. And so they all want to get out of these places and go somewhere warm, right? And Canadians especially when they leave and have to leave Canada.
And by the way, can I mention one other thing? All these Canadians that do this, by the way, they're all working for the government. So they all have lovely salaries. Yes. And they haven't spent as much of the money that they normally would, because they've normally been out for lovely meals the whole time, right? And going out for drinks with the pals and everything work. They're not doing that now. So they've got all the savings.
Yes.
So then it gets really, really cold in Canada. And so, what do they think then should they do?
So all these politicians in Canada are, I mean, there's really vicious lockdowns in Canada. Like there is in many of, you know, the former colonies of Britain, interesting enough, who always want to outdo the home country. So it's been really vicious. People are getting arrested in various parts of Canada. There was a woman who had a baby who was refused permission to travel from Toronto to Newfoundland, because it wasn't essential. She wanted to bring her baby home so that her parents could help her with childcare. And she was told it's not essential travel, you're not allowed back in. So this is the kind of thing they're doing to...
So that's the context. Yes. And what have they done? So what have the great leaders done?
Every politician that you've never heard of in Canada, which is most of them...
I'm just looking at the lineup of the faces here.
They've all left the country and all travelled away. And this is a list of the dirty dozen or two from the CBC. Now, CBC is the state-run broadcaster in Canada, and look at this headline, this anodyne headline. Here are the Canadian politicians facing questions over travel amid COVID-19 restrictions. No, here are the dirty, stinking Canadian
lying hypocrites.
Right? I mean, federal MPs, you know, people you've never heard of, but you know, a lot of them have had to resign. Actually, funny enough, Liberal MP Kamal Khera, she's stepping down as parliamentary...
Where did she go?
She was parliamentary secretary to the International Development Minister, Karina Gould, who you've never heard of either. She went, to be fair to her, she went to Seattle to attend a private memorial. My personal favourite is the finance minister from Ontario. There's Conservative MP Ron Leipart. He travelled to Palm Desert on two occasions for essential house maintenance. I always find that...
those windows just need to be looked at.
Painted or something.
Something.
Because...
opened and closed.
My personal favourite is the finance minister of Ontario, Rod Phillips. Ontario, I suppose, it's a big province. It probably does need a finance minister, but
Where did Rod go, Phelan?
Rod went to... Well, Rod, no, actually, to be fair to Rod, he was very, very communicative. He really communicated a lot during
the
pandemic.
Good for him.
Especially in the run-up in December, he sent out videos telling people not to leave the house.
Don't leave the house.
Don't travel.
There's
even pictures then, before Christmas, pictures of him visiting local businesses.
Good for him.
To make sure that they were doing okay.
Wonderful.
In the run-up.
Even in the cold weather and everything.
Yes. Yeah.
Isn't that lovely?
And, you know, then it turns out that he'd actually recorded the videos of telling people not to leave the house from the Caribbean island of St. Barts. The pictures of him visiting the businesses were actually old pictures that he'd faked up.
Oh, I like it. So I presume he's gone.
Yes, yeah. So, Saskatchewan, I mean, they're all over the place. There's a list of them. If you want, we'll put it in... We'll send this article out on Twitter on the Anne Phelan Scoop.
And on the social medias. Yvonne will put that out on the social media. Yes. So you can look up your favourite. Yeah, there's one from Saskatchewan who went to Palm Springs. It's lovely.
Another one.
Oh, to finalise the sale of a home.
It's very funny. All these people have either had home maintenance issues or needing to finalise sales of homes, etc., that entails them to travel to really, really nice places.
Where it's warm, by the way. And actually, you can really understand that. But the point is, big, fat hypocrites. We're sick and tired of big, fat hypocrites. You know, Nancy
telling
Pelosi...
you it's too dangerous to travel. It's too dangerous
But actually, it's even worse than that. I mean, I think the Nancy Pelosi thing, I think, wins the day. So... It's so dangerous. Everything's so dangerous. It's so dangerous that we're going to have you infected with COVID come into the chamber, come indoors.
Yes, vote for me.
To vote for me, because nothing matters more than me getting voted in again as Speaker. And her 147
her last birthday. And her fresh from her blowjob.
Blow dry, Phelan.
No, blow out.
Blow, yes.
Was it a blow? What was it?
It's a blowout film. Or
is it a blow dry?
It's a blow dry.
What's the difference between a, can I ask you, what's the difference between a blow dry and a blowout?
Phelan is trying desperately to backpedal there on that one. So that's enough from us for today. So we will see you tomorrow morning, bright and early. So looking forward to that, as yes. you can imagine. And I'm sure there'll be loads of news, because that's one of the problems we've had on this daily virus podcast, is just too much news.
Yes.
But anyway, listen, well, happy new year. It's good to be back, and it's good to have you guys
back
here.
We're going to DC later on the week.
We are going to DC.
More details. Listen, tomorrow we'll give you more details. We're going to the White House again.
Yes.
Okay,
well then listen, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks.
Bye.